the settlers and the Arab population, the Palestinian population, sits upon is a disputed land. It has never been decided who does it belong to. So until we can reach a final agreement between us and the Palestinian, we cannot say this is a Palestinian land or this is an Israeli land or this is this. We have to sit down and negotiate. And that is exactly what we've been trying to do with Yasser Arafat for the last decade. And unfortunately, Yasser Arafat rejected it. A lot of people feel that the settlement is the problem. The settlement is not the problem. We can really reach a compromise on the issue of settlement. And everybody, Prime Minister Rabin, Peres, Barak, and even Netanyahu understood that this is a sensitive issue. But we will not put it as the real obstacle. The real issue is, does Yasser Arafat
really want to have peace? Yes, but was it a necessity? I mean, is it a necessity to have settlers?
I will tell you this. Settlers are human beings like you, me, and the Palestinian that live on that land. If a new couple among the Palestinians that live in Jericho wants to build a house, nobody stops him. And if they have kids, that's what good. Why can't Jewish settlers? West Bank.
Okay, I think it's time for a second question now from Amir on line two. Is he still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, Amir, go ahead.
My question is, how do you reconcile the notion of a democratic state with the apartheid rules in Israel that prevent Israeli Arabs from holding certain offices and that type of thing? And also, to your statement about settlements, the settlement building is actually a Israeli government policy, which is the stated goal of which is to prevent the or to make it more difficult to return the West Bank to the Palestinians. How do you reconcile that with the notion of peace?
Okay, is that your question? Okay, I'm gonna ask Dan to answer that question.
Okay.
Amir.
Israel is a democracy, and as a matter of fact, let me remind you, and you probably know it very well, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. No other Arab country in that region is a democracy. And you know it, and I know it, and everybody knows it. How is Israel a democracy? Did you know that 20% of the Israeli population are Arab Israelis? Did you know that they have full membership in the Knesset, that they can vote, that they can be elected to the Israeli parliament? They are full members. That is the true meaning of democracy. Democracy is something that represents all the population. The issue of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is a national conflict where two people have a demand for the same land, and it's a very little, tiny piece of land. It has got nothing to do with democracy. Democracy is about respecting human rights, civil rights, and this is exactly what we do in Israel, and we fight for our survival in the Middle East against Palestinian terrorist activity.
All right, we are going to have another caller on line three, Donna.
Yes, I just wanted to say, why is it that the Israelis feel that all Palestinians or people of Arabic descent hate the Israelis? There is no such thing that Palestinians or Arabs hate Israelis. They learn the hate from the hate that the Israelis have for Arabs themselves. And another thing is I am a Palestinian American. I do not have the right to go back to my homeland, Palestine, to live there, as opposed to somebody else who is of European Jewish descent has full rights to live and build a settlement on my homeland, which my family has been there for generations upon generations and have deeds for. How can you explain that? How can you all say that you're a democratic state or a nation and have no hate and that you guys fight for your survival? And Arabs or Palestinians try to fight for their survival. They're considered terrorists.
Okay, we need to, if that's your question, I'm going to call on Donna De La Paz to answer that question.
Okay. All Palestinians do not hate Israelis. Just like all Israelis do not hate Palestinians. American Jewish Committee has a program that's called Project Interchange. And that's a program where we take non-Jews, elected leaders, school, university editors, all different religious leaders, into the West Bank and into Israel to meet with Palestinian leaders and Israeli leaders. We have wonderful relationships. This does not mean that all Palestinians hate Israelis at all. It's Yasser Arafat's Palestinian Liberation Organization.
I have to beg to differ with
you on that
one.
And all the other organizations like Hezbollah, Hamas, and those organizations that try to eradicate Jews. Now,
the only people that are eradicating
to...
anybody else are the Israelis. They're the ones who are trying to eradicate the Palestinian people. They're trying to do away with the Palestinian society.
All right, you've asked your question. It's been answered. Let's move on to...
I want to mention one more thing.
Line six, and that is David.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, David.
Hello? Hi, David. Ask your question.
Okay, I just wanted to make a point and ask how many years exactly in about 3,000 years has there been the Jewish occupation of, not occupation, but the rooting of the homeland? Because according to my history, the Jews were not the first people there. The Canaanites were there before the Jewish people over 1,000 years. And the Canaanites are descendants of from Noah, go back into non-Jewish people. If I'm wrong, please correct me.
All right, we're going to let Donna take a shot at that question. Donna?
The Jews have had presence in Israel, in that land, for the past 3,300 years. The only Arab dominion since the conquest in 635 CE lasted no more than 22 years. So for over 3,300 years, Jerusalem has been the Jewish capital. Jerusalem has never been the capital of any Arab or Muslim entity. Even when the Jordanians occupied Jerusalem, they never sought to make it their capital, and Arab leaders did not come to visit.
Is that it? All right, Donna, let me pose the next question here to the panel and start another line of thinking here. When the Jews from many Arab countries were dispossessed from Arab lands, they took refuge in Israel, where they were given safe haven by Israel and welcomed warmly. Are you aware of any Arab country who has extended the hand of friendship to their Palestinian brothers and offered them asylum, and if not, why not? Donna?
I haven't seen anybody offer that. And also, look at exactly what's going on right now. Saudi Arabia is raising millions of dollars to send to the Palestinian Authority to buy arms, to have weapons against Israel. Why didn't they send those millions of dollars for the past 30 years to help the Palestinians? So my question is, my answer is that no Arab country has offered to help. Even when the Palestinians were expelled from Jordan, they were not allowed to be a part of Jordan. Syria wouldn't take them in. Nobody would take in this group of people. So it's not Israel that's worried about having peace. Israel wants to have peace and wants to have a Palestinian state alongside an Israeli state. So it's the Arab territories that are pushing out the Palestinians.
All right, thank you. Let's have one more question here that I'd like to pose to Dan Shacham. Dan, do you know what kind of education the Palestinian children are receiving to help them live side by side in peace with their Israeli neighbors?
Well, unfortunately, that kind of coexistence education does not exist, not in the Palestinian Authority nor in other Arab countries. Unfortunately, throughout the years, the Arab regimes, the dictators that are controlling the Arab world, have not put any effort in convincing their people that there is a need for coexistence with Israel. I think that the only person that was very genuine in his wish for peace was King Hussein of Jordan, that really wanted to establish a type of coexistence with Israel. But you see books like Mein Kampf of Hitler, the protocols of the elders of Zion sold in kiosks and in shops. You see in Kuwait that they have a TV program where they depict Sharon as drinking the blood of children. You see a major newspaper or the formal newspaper in Saudi Arabia saying that Jews use the teenager blood to make pastry. It's a type of incitement that is not only limited to the political issue or to Israel. It's a type of incitement that goes back throughout the years into the issue of anti anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish feeling, and really degenerate the whole Arab world into a hating society, hating towards the West, hating towards Israel, which they recognize as a bastion of the West in their midst.
All right, thank you, Dan. It's time to take another call from our listening audience. We have, I think it's Dick on line four. Or Rick. Is it Rick? I'm sorry.
It's Rick.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah. You call the territories disputed, but if you look at the UN resolutions, if you look at the European Union declarations, they're called occupied territories. The only country that calls them disputed is basically the U.S. press. Considering that UN Resolution 194 calls for repatriation of Palestinians after the Dar Sayyim massacre, and Resolution 242 calls for Israel to basically retreat to the pre-1967 borders of the Six-Day War, and considering, you know, Moshe Dayan himself said in the
Let's get to the question.
Let me finish my question. Are you trying to control the debate, or do the facts matter? May I continue, please?
Go ahead.
Okay. The April 4th, 1967 issue of Haaretz, where Moshe Dayan said that there isn't a single Israeli settlement. It was not once Arab.
All right, we're gonna. You've got to get to your question, or we're gonna have to.
The question is, why does not Israel follow the UN resolutions, the declarations, or the requests of the European Union?
Okay.
Why does it insist on calling the occupied territories disputed? They are not disputed in say. The rest of the planet.
All right. Okay. We have your question. Dan, would you like to address it?
Rick, disputed is when the two parties that are engaged have not decided what to do with it or what's going to be the future of that place. That's the basic meaning of disputed, not come to an agreement. That's why we were engaged in peace process with the Palestinian, with Yasser Arafat, exactly in order to clarify that dispute over that land. Get your facts correct. Resolution 242 calls for withdrawals from territories, not from the territories, from territories. Rick, let me answer. The fact of the matter that the people who have wrote this UN resolution understood that Israel may not and cannot, and we know it today, withdraw from each and every thing that happened. You have to secure borders from Israel. You may not want to do that, but we want to do that. If you take the 1967 border and return to them today, you will get an Israel with narrow borders that are 8 miles between the eastern and the western borders, 8 mile wide. Nobody can defend that, not even you. And we don't have a tendency to commit suicide, so that we are going to come to an agreement with the Palestinian, and we are going to have defensible border, secure borders for Israel.
All right, thank you, and we're going to go to line two now, and that is Mike.
Hello, how are you today?
Fine. Is it Mike? Did I have that
right? That's right.
Go ahead, Mike.
I want to take exception. I'd like to give your listeners a bit of a bit of reading material. www.cactus48.com/truth. It's a booklet put out by the Jews for Justice in the Middle East, called The Origin of the Palestine-Israel Conflict. Now I want to take an exception to the.
What is your question?
My question is, it's two pronged. The first is a comment on a statement that was made earlier. Hold on a second. There was a comment made earlier that wasn't actually correct, as I understand it. The extended kingdoms of David and Solomon, on which Zionists base their traditional demands.
You please state your question?
My question is this. My question is this. How long have there been refugee camps in these territories, and how can you justify the continued existence of these refugee camps?
All right, thank you. Dan, would you like to answer that?
Yes, of course. We've offered the Palestinian many times in the past to put the refugees in their in a good, reasonable, decent housing, and to give them means of employment and for them to start conducting their own lives. My parents were refugees from Morocco. They came in 1956. They had to escape Morocco because Morocco was no longer safe. My wife's family had to escape Germany. They were refugees, and they found a place of refuge, a safe haven in Israel. Unfortunately, the Palestinian refugees were kept as a symbol. Arab countries like Lebanon. Lebanon has 300,000 Palestinian refugees. They don't have citizenship. They don't have permanent residency. They don't have nothing. Nobody has taken care of them. And the Palestinian themselves, the Palestinian Authority, kept them as a symbol for what happened. Instead of looking at the humanitarian problem that it's causing and trying to solve the problem right now, right here, so that we can go ahead for coexistence without grouching on what happened 50 years ago.
All right, Donna has something she wants to add to that. Donna?
Since we're talking about refugees, the number of Arab refugees who left Israel in 1948 is estimated to be around 630,000. The number of Jewish refugees from Arab lands is the same number. So when you talk about refugees, you have to talk about the Jewish refugees also, people who were kicked out of Arab countries. Arab refugees were intentionally not absorbed or integrated into the Arab lands to which they fled, despite the vast Arab territory.
All right, we're going to take a question from Jack on line 7. Jack, go ahead.
Yes, I'll try to make this as quick as possible. My question is in regards to I'm a reporter. I'd like to know why there's a media blackout in Jenin, why the International Red Cross and the Red Crescent Society is not allowed in, why Israeli defense forces are so violent against those who are attempting to get into what the Palestinians call occupied territories. That's my question. Also, if indeed the settlements are disputed territories, why would the Israeli government allow for the disputed territories to be means with which to increase or exacerbate situations by building settlements? And those are my two questions.
All right, thank you very much. Two good questions. Dan?
Jack, you're a reporter for what kind of media? Because for the last few days, the West Bank and all the cities in it, including Jenin, has been open to the media. We have got nothing to hide, and now that the media have been there and we have seen pictures from Jenin, we have seen that there was no such a thing as what the Palestinian described as a massacre. There was no massacre. There was a struggle there. There was heavy fighting between Israeli soldiers and terrorists. I think that it's important to emphasize in this point that Israel is fighting the terrorists. We've got no quarrel with the Palestinian population. We've got no issues or no intention in harming anybody. The people that we are looking after are the terrorists and terrorists only. And that is in sharp contrast to the terrorists who are deliberately killing Israel and murdering Israeli civilians. There is a sharp distinction. Jenin was a dangerous place because we have been fighting terrorism. We do not feel that having a cameraman running around would be beneficial for the cameraman or for us or for anybody else. Two, the Palestinians have been notorious for using anything that they could imagine to as a disguise. They have been using ambulances to transfer arms. They have been using people that have been civilians to disguise as terrorists. What would prevent them disguising themselves as journalists? So in that sense, I think that we were there after the terrorists, and now it's open and everybody can see what happened there.
Okay, thank you. Robert, you've been holding on a long time. What's your question, please?
I'd like to know how y'all feel that now that the news about Jenin and Ramallah and all the refugee camps that have been, there's been a massacre going on there, and once that is exposed to the world, which outside the United States, it's been exposed to the whole rest of the world. And if you go online, you can get that information. But, I mean, what happens when the people here in the United States get that information? How are you going to cover yourself? And actually, once the information about the massacres is exposed, what are you all going to do?
Okay, we have your question. I'm going to ask Donna to answer that.
Okay, Robert, when you talk about covering yourself, we have nothing to hide, as Dan said before. The news about the refugee camps, if you don't want to look at Israeli or Jewish websites and you don't want to look at Palestinian websites, there are very fair websites. Camera.org is one of them. Fox News is giving the most unbiased view of what's going on. It wasn't a massacre. They're showing you that tens were killed, not hundreds were killed. So it's an interesting propaganda that's coming out from the Palestinians about what's actually happening there. Let me just say that on one of the ambulances that Dan was talking about, they sent in with children, had children's bodies with bombs attached to them. So this is not using the correct information or getting the correct information. And one thing I wanted to add to the previous caller, too, about the Red Crescent is that the whole world, basically, has not accepted, or the International Red Cross has not accepted Magen David Adom as part of the Red Cross. Magen David Adom is the same thing as the International Red Cross here in the United States. And in Palestine, they won't accept it either. So you have some disputed information that you're getting, and some of the information you just talked about is incorrect. And one other thing I heard this morning as I was driving in is they said on this radio station that the Israelis were using the drivers of the ambulances as shields as they go into the territories. That is completely false and incorrect. So I just wanted to add that.
All right, David, you've been holding on for a while here. What's your question? David, are you there?
Hello?
Yes?
Yes. First of all, happy Yom HaTzma'ut to everybody.
Thank you.
I'm an American Jew who lived in Israel for a while. I've got a question that's hypothetical but introspective. Do you think if the majority of the 3 million or so Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza were, let's say, hypothetically, to decide that instead of having their own state, they'd now like to live democratically as Israeli citizens, do you think this would be acceptable to Israel and to the majority of the Jews in the Galut? And the follow-up to that, which relates to that, can we really indefinitely expect to maintain a Jewish majority, and if so, for how long, and still be fair and democratic?
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to direct that question to Rabbi Oroff, Ben Oroff. Rabbi?
I think that the majority of Israelis are seeking a positive resolution that would allow everybody to live side by side in peace, to have the opportunities to make their lives in the land that they've chosen to inhabit. And I think that the possibilities are very much what is the hope and the desire and the dream. From the perspective of how to do that, that's a little bit more complicated, but I just want to share one model of where it has shown to be a possibility, and that is there is a woman in Denver who brings together Jewish and Christian and Palestinian girls for 2 weeks in the summer and has them live side by side and face each other and see each other as human beings and teaches them to do conflict resolution and to deal with anger and to learn to see one another as people. And that those kinds of behaviors and methodologies are really what is going to be the secret to dealing with this in a positive, nonviolent way. Anyone who is a rational, thinking human being can only be willing to accept something along those lines because it really is to everyone's benefit.
But isn't the two-state solution really the best of many bad solutions? And wouldn't the ideal solution be one state in which everybody could live together? And wouldn't the necessity for a Jewish majority be secondary to the necessity for a full democracy for everybody? And has there ever been a Jewish majority in the past? Isn't this the first time that there really is inside 367?
I'm going to ask the rabbi to answer that question quickly because we've got some other people waiting.
The way that I want to answer this is that the details will have to be decided in a way that's going to be equitable. But the fact of the matter is, if there is not a place somewhere where Jews are a majority, the fact that we are a minority everywhere else makes it very, very problematic for us. So that the importance of having some semblance of Jews feeling like they are in control and have their own place is absolutely essential.
Thank you. Let's go to Waleed on line 5. Waleed, come on in.
Thank you for giving me the chance to talk. I actually have two quick comments, and I have another comment that I'd like, Dan.
You have to ask your question, please, if you will.
Okay, I will, but if you give me the chance just to make two quick comments. One comment is the Jewish in the Arab countries, they've never been expelled. They've been given the chance to either live in their homeland, the Arab countries, or live wherever they want. And actually, still till today, some of the Jewish communities in Arab countries, they still live there. That's one thing. They've never been expelled. Another thing, the money being raised in Saudi Arabia was not for the Palestinians to buy weapons. It's actually to buy more medics to help the Palestinian civilians to rebuild their houses that have been demolished that we've been seeing on the TV every day.
Okay, what is your question?
My question is, as early in the program, Dan said that the Palestinian, if he wished to build a house, he can do that. I am Palestinian that I live 23 years old under occupation, and when you build a house on your own land with your own money, you go get a license from the Israeli occupation authority. They give you a license written on it, rent not to own. Does that as a civil right for people who live under occupation?
Okay. Dan's ready to answer that. Thank you.
Hi, Waleed. Shalom. Salam alaikum.
Shalom.
Waleed, the Jews and Muslims can live wonderfully side by side together. It is a possibility. We have seen it in the past. We see it in Israel. We see it in many other parts of the world. When Arab nationalism came to power, look at Iraq, look at Morocco, look at other parts of the world, Jews were prosecuted. In Iran, just a year and a half ago, 13 Jews that have done nothing were almost facing the death sentence. So Jewish persecution is not something that we imagine. Can you be a Jew in Saudi and practice your religion? Can you be a Jew and go and visit Mecca or anything else? So there is a Jewish discrimination to some degree in Islam, but it was very enforced by Arab dictators that use religion for their own purposes. I don't say that Jews were always persecuted. They can live in peace and they will live in peace. Now let me give you the answer to your question. The issue of, and you mentioned it, you got a permission from the authorities that need to give you a permission to build a house. So do I. When I want to build a house in Israel, I also have to get a permission. That is the rule of law. When you want to buy a house here in Houston, you have to get a permission. The issue of owning the land, because of the scarcity of land, I do not own the land that my house is built upon. All the lands are leased for 99 years. So it's the same for you, it's the same for me, it's the same for everybody.
Okay, thank you very much. Salam alaikum, Waleed. We're going to take Marilyn on line 3.
Hi. My question is for all of you. I'm an American Jew. My friends and I have such a feeling of impotence when we watch what I feel to be a biased accounting, you know, Janine, all that kind of thing. What can we as American Jews do to help Israel?
Good question, and we're going to ask Donna to take that.
We can do so much. One is you can start with writing letters to the editor, writing op-eds for the newspaper, writing to your congressional leaders. You can attend rallies that are being held throughout the country that are showing solidarity with Israel. You can meet with friends, have groups over to explain to your non-Jewish friends exactly what is going on and give them the correct facts. All of this, I have been doing my own. I am from an inter-ethnic family, and I have been explaining what's been going on in Israel to my in-laws and to my family. And I think it's very important to do this, to meet with people from all different countries, to meet with legislators, to get your word out. And it all it takes is one voice. And the Houston Chronicle, I know, listens to your voices.
Thank you very much, Donna. We're going to take another question from line two, and that is Sam.
Hello.
Hi. Is that the right, Sam?
Yeah, this is Sam. Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Sam. I'm an African. You are a people of history. Can you address the fact that the Arab leaders are very deceitful? They don't allow their people to know about your history. You can't carry Bible to Saudi Arabia or in some country, they don't allow you to practice your religion. Can you address that, disciple of your Arab leaders?
We're having a little technical problem here.
We're going to take Crystal on line four.
Hello?
Hello, is that Crystal?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. We had a little technical problem for a minute, but that's 1999.
No, 2002, Bob. You missed it in a couple of years.
Well, that's why I say it.
Okay, you got everybody laughing. That's good.
I had a question for Rabbi Ben-Hur. Actually, I find her family history fascinating. I think she's Sephardic Jew. And I have a different perspective, okay? I'll give you a little bit about my background. My father is an Ashkenazi Jew, which is a Scandinavian European descent. However, I studied comparative religion for many years in college, and I have converted to Islam quite controversially. And I just want to correct people that there's a big difference between Orthodox Judaism and Zionism. Racism does not necessarily exist in Orthodox Judaism, but the Zionist political movement is quite contrary,
we need
to really be interreflective.
We
like
need
this.
A question, not a speech. Can
right,
you give us your question?
Called in earlier, I have a question. How can you be introspective? I mean, the facts are the facts. First of all, Fox 26 News. No.
Give us your question, please.
Okay. How can you be introspective? How do you defend Zionism? How do you defend Zionism and Judaism? I mean, it's like an anti. It's like okay. If you're a Jew, you're a self-hating Jew, but if you're a non-Jew, then you're anti-Semitic. There's a big difference. The Zionists are murdering Palestinians, and this is the fact.
All right.
How do you compare for our viewers?
We're gonna move. We can't get a question. We're gonna move.
Zionism. How do you compare that for listeners?
We're gonna move on to line one. And that is Monty. Are you
there? Yes, sir.
All right. Well, come on, Monty. Ask your question.
Well, my question is directly related to people like the woman or the young lady who just called, you know, questioning Zionism and things like that. My question to her is, how does she think that Palestinians would fare under a system similar to the one that was running in the Palestinian Mandate when the British controlled it, where the Effendis, the royalty, so to speak, were landowners and absentee, and the Fellahin, which are the citizens of Palestine, were largely uneducated people who were motivated by religious figures into this Jewish hatredism, which is evident in Saudi Arabia.
We need a question, not
a speech. My question is, would the Palestinians fare better under an independent state using or being allied with these people who are still, in essence, focusing on the destruction of Israel?
We understand.
Monty, in line of what Donna said before, and it's great that you're calling, and I suggest that you will pick up the phone the next time that there are people that are saying that Israel is taking the lands of the Palestinian or some other nonsense, and pose them exactly with that questions, and let's see how do they answer it.
All right, thank you. We're going to take Isaiah. Isaiah, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, good morning.
First of all, I want to thank you for the... I want to thank you, Connor. First of all, I want to let you know again that I want to recognize for all that property. We have never come back to ask for that property. My question is, why are you guys killing yourself over that property? And secondly, why did you claim that you are the choosing people, and why are you intimidating people on that that aspect? And what do you call democracy? Because you look at when I look at the situation, this is nothing but demonstration of business.
Okay, Donna, would you like to answer that?
When you're talking about giving back lands, what we have done, and if you notice, that violence and war does not help. In Egypt, we gave back the Sinai. With Lebanon on the northern border, we pulled out of Lebanon. All of these were through negotiations. And through negotiations, there will be a Palestinian state. And it's something that will be beneficial. What we have to do now is make sure, once there becomes a state, that the Palestinians take out of their charter that all Jews must die and be killed. If that has to be taken out before there can ever be a Palestinian state, they have to live side by side in peace. Thanks for your call.
Okay, we're going to take Chris on line 6. Chris?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Or right about there?
Right about there is right.
Okay, first off, I'd like to kind of admonish the panel for the way you're filtering in and out of questions you really don't want to answer, and that you're cutting people off without giving some sort of preface to their question. My question is, why isn't there a call that's being heard within the Israeli and most specifically the Jewish community against some of the things that Sharon is saying that fall well within the types of comments you say you don't want to hear from the Palestinians? He has been very vocal about saying, push him in the ocean, take him out, I don't care.
All right, we'll let Dan answer that.
Well, Chris, Israel is a democracy, and in Israel, like any other democracy, you have people that agree to the opinions of the prime minister, and you have those that don't. Just like here in the Jewish community, there are those who agree with Prime Minister Sharon and those that do not agree with him. That's the nature of democracy. Just because you don't agree with somebody, you don't push him to the sea or just something like that.
But
Sharon is the democratically elect, the only democratically elected leader in the Middle East. He was elected by an overwhelming majority, and he was elected because the Intifada that broke in the time of former Prime Minister Barak.
You didn't hear my question. I'm sorry. The statements that Mr. Sharon has made have been very specific, especially the night that all of this started with the new attacks, or whatever you want to call them, from point of view dictates the term, is that he was quoted as specifically saying, I don't care what you do, push them in the ocean. Okay, how can the hypocrisy of that be tolerated? Because that's what undermines the voice of anyone who wants reason from the Israeli side. Is what sticks in my mind. When I hear him say that, he discounts anything that's said.
Chris, I don't know where you take your sources on what Prime Minister Sharon has said, but I've never seen even one Palestinian that was pushed in the ocean. The only people with their back to the ocean are the Israelis. What we've been doing in those recent operations was to fight terrorism. The only people that are attacked, the only civilians that are attacked, the only people that a massacre is waged against them are the Israelis. There is a massacre going in Israel by the Palestinians. When a Palestinian terrorist goes to a cafe and kills 20 people, when a Palestinian terrorist is going to a seder in Netanya and kills 21 people, when Palestinians relentlessly kill Israelis, civilians, that's massacre. That's terrorism. That's deliberately killing civilians. And that only happens from the Palestinians to the Israelis.
Okay, thank you. We're going to take Steve on line 5.
Well, hello. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you fine.
Well, my question is about the lineup of the entire Arab world against Israel right now and the desperate mindset of Sharon. And it's sort of a doomsday question, and I'm not sure which of your panel is best suited to foil it, but the question is, what is to stop Ariel Sharon from considering the unthinkable and launching preemptives against Baghdad and Tehran, both regimes implicated in the Palestinian struggle.
Steve, okay. All right, Steve.
Steve, my question, are you real? I mean, are we defending ourselves? Is Sharon done anything just out of the blue? Have you forgotten what started this chaos? Have you started that 18 months ago, Barack made an excellent offer to the Palestinians, and what was their response? Violence, terrorism, violence, terrorists against civilians. When we have done this last operation, when was it after 18 months that we called upon Yasser Arafat again and again to stop the terrorism? What did we find? That he brought arms, ammunition, that he sent terrorists, that he financed terrorism. And you, Steve, come with the ultimate answer. Sharon is to blame. Where do you take it? Why will we do something which is not meant to defend ourselves? That's the only thing that we do.
Well, in terms of defense, it would be preemptive, and that's my own, and that's sort of the mindset that I'm seeing. And I don't mean to pin it all on Sharon. It's
Thank
just
you.
there is a desperation that's going on, and people do things out of desperation that they wouldn't reasonably do. And it is, you know, where am I coming from? You know, I'm not Jewish and I'm not Arab. I'm just very concerned, and what I see going on is cause for concern, if not outright fear.
All right, well, thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
I'm going to throw in a question here of my own. Many Arab countries have spoken out against the Israelis for their incursions into Palestinian-controlled lands for the purpose of rooting out the terrorists. Are you aware of any Arab country that has called upon Arafat to discontinue suicide or now homicide bombings?
I'm not aware of that. I'm aware of people that have been calling Arafat again and again to do his best, and Arafat has ignored all these calls. He has not done anything to control. On the contrary, we just found the documents where he authorized the payment for the suicide bomber's supply. So not only that he has been, in a sort, using all this campaign of terror to kill Israelis, but he's been, you know, fooling everybody, pretending as if he listens to what is going on, and at the same time, he was the one behind all these attacks, importing the Karine A, the arms, airship, and financing and campaigning this terror campaign.
Okay, thank you very much for being here today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I enjoyed it. I don't know about you.
Oh, mama, mama, look there. We're putting our plane in the street again. Don't you know what happened down there? A youth of 14 got shot down there. The cocaine guns jammed downtown. The killing clowns of blood money men. Washington bullets again. Every cell in Chile will tell the cries of the tortured men. Remember the name the days before the army came. Please remember Victor Jara in the Santiago Stadium. Verdad. Oh, Washington bullets again. And in the Bay of Pigs in 1961, I signed up for the Playboy in the Cuban sun. But Castro is the color, is a redder than red. But Washington bullets won Castro dead. But Castro is the color. The color to a spray of lead.
Welcome to KPFT. This is Bob Bazanko on Open Journal. That was The Clash singing Washington Bullets, which was an appropriate song because today Washington's bullets are helping to kill the women and children, doctors and ministers, clergy in Palestine. You're listening to KPFT, the voice of the dispossessed and the voiceless. The past hour, you may have thought you were listening to Fox as we had an apologist for the terrorist state of Israel. We're reverting back to regular Pacifica programming right now. We're going to talk about the role Americans have had in the recent coup in Venezuela. We're going to have a representative from the Venezuelan consulate and talk to a local expert on the issue. Then after that, we're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming march in Washington, D.C. for peace this weekend and talk to somebody who's done some work on the Vietnam anti-war movement and how it compares to current efforts. So thanks for listening to us, and welcome again to KPFT.